Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Jokoji. Those of you near and not so near, it's really lovely to be together. Fortunate that we have all these ways to reach out and touch each other. And thank you for those of you who made it up here for exploring this practice with us. I hope it wasn't too painful for those of you for whom this was your very first Zazen sitting meditation. Maybe it was great. How many of you are here for the first time? Well, thanks for being brave and making it up that hill and making it to that seat and having an open heart for this practice. I feel like I've just come up the hill again for the first time as well. I've been traveling. I had a family trip to Costa Rica. And my family, my adult sons and their girlfriends, picked a very remote part of Costa Rica. I joke a little bit that you can only get there by plane or boat. And I think they picked this very remote place so that I couldn't escape. It was on the north side of the Osa Peninsula, this is a rainforest, and it is considered probably the most biologically dense, meaning more creatures in this square footage, so to speak, one of the most biologically dense places on the entire planet. No major highways. In the dry season, it's possible to get there with a four-wheel drive. I wouldn't recommend it. I was there at the very beginning of the dry season, and the roads are not anything that you would consider a road. But it's in a particularly beautiful place. It's a jungle. Basically, everywhere you look, there's a jungle, little crisscrossing roads going through it. And there are a lot of national parks. One in particular, which is called Corcovado, also only available by boat ride. And that park protects the most significant stands of virgin rainforest in the world. They don't let you get off the boat if you have a water bottle. There's no plastic going on that national park. They will not let you get off the boat. It didn't happen to me. I was a good girl. They're really protective. And in fact, my exclamations as we trekked through this beautiful forest, every once in a while I would say, look. And the guide would look at me and say, shh, you're disturbing the animals. So they really take good care. They really take good care. On my very first morning at Drake Bay, I sat Zazen in my one pair of pajamas on this broad deck overlooking this very wet, green, beautiful jungle. There were no other humans awake at that hour, but I was absolutely not alone. I'll let you hear what I heard in just a minute. The rainforest for this entire time I was there was my zendo. And it was filled with uncountable and mostly unseen beings. There's this very humid, soft air compared to California, very humid and very soft air. It felt kind of like you're always getting a little bit of a hug, this kind of supportive embrace. And every morning, I and all of these really vocal, noisy creatures were waking up together, welcoming the new day. I was perfectly silent in this exercise of waking up with the new day. They were not. And this is what I heard. We did that for a long time. So I'd never heard these sounds before. And by the way, my undergraduate degree was in primate biology. So I heard a lot of ape and monkey sounds in my youth. I'd never heard these sounds before. And I sat zazen in my pajamas, feeling like a little child discovering the world for the first time. I had no idea who was there with me. I couldn't begin to discriminate between what that was. I had no language for any of that. It was completely novel to these ears. And it was a cacophony. That's just the beginning. It goes on for quite some time. It was like a symphony of life. And not being able to locate in my experience, in my bodily experience in this lifetime, what any of that was, much less identify any of those sounds, I was only able to have the experience, just this experience. The mind that checks things off, oh, that's that, that's that, that's that, that's that, had nothing, nothing. There was nothing with which I had to work. The catalog by which I referenced and we all reference existence, gone, absent. I didn't have a mind which knew anything about this experience. And this innocence arrived with the flavor of freedom for me. I really felt relieved. This feeling of being able to sit down and not know what was happening did not feel foreign. It did not feel any sense of dis-ease. It felt like I'd been able to set down anything I'd ever carried around. And it was a sense of deep rest in this very noisy place. Actually, a sense that I had never had anything to be concerned about in the first place. And with it came this kind of awareness that everything was in its place, in its rightful place, not right or wrong, rightful, but just as it should be, as it is, including this one sitting there and my kids. Everything was in place. This was a sense of deep okayness. Not great, not bad, just completely okay. I guess we would probably call that acceptance. That word's kind of loaded for people, but it felt deeply okay. And that stayed with me. I was this being in this seat with all those other beings. Most, I couldn't really see any of them. Rain was coming down and the birds weren't flying. Whatever those sounds were all hidden deep in the greenness. But we were all in our seats, taking our individual and collective parts in that symphony. And it felt like a vast and infinite symphony. This person sitting there felt somehow indistinguishable from the moment, from the experience. I couldn't really locate this as separate from all of that. It was like a wave of life arising and receding and arising and receding. And I wonder if just right now that's happening too, right here. There is no space between this being and the moment. There is no space between these beings and this moment, right here, right now. We're doing this together right now, just like all those animals and I were doing it together back then. It's all of us expressing life. So for me, the morning jungle was just like the experience that probably all of us have had at one time or another, looking up at the night sky. I know someone was looking at the night sky last night, trying to find the planetary parade that's happening. So we look up in awe and somehow recognize ourselves being recognized by that whole beautiful sphere up there, which we're a part. Here we are, just another little light breathing in that whole world and in the vast array of life, life being the force that is recognizing us too. So it feels like life is the force and it is expressing itself through us and everything all the time. That was my experience. And speaking of the forest, I want to tell you that our hosts at Drake Bay, they told me that if they didn't pay attention to the perimeter of their buildings and kind of keep a path around these buildings, that the jungle would take them over within a month. It would just consume them. It would just creep on and eat it all up. And in fact, they made us breakfast and dinner every day, and it was an outdoor kitchen. They would throw everything that we would compost over the edge into the jungle. And I took to watching where it landed. And every day it was gone by morning, the next morning, gone. Some little hand had reached out, some little microbe had grabbed it. I don't know what was going on in there, but it was intense. And it would take everything. I began to see the jungle, that whole world is kind of this. I gotta say, I projected benevolence on it. It's not benevolent, but I kept thinking of it as this benevolent beast. The jungle was this benevolent beast that would recycle everything that we could give it very generously. And it seemed to me that it was so obvious that the whole system of life with a capital L is like that. Very graciously taking care of everything, kind of in this whole, wholesome, even complete functional system. And we too are part of that. Although it seems, in the face of all this mutuality, that we sometimes get in our own way and certainly get in the way of the planet taking care of everything and us. And it seems to me that this activity that we separate ourselves out from all those other creatures, seen and unseen, is the source of our suffering. And in fact, the Buddha's very first teaching, as many of you know, his very first observation about how we can be free was the acknowledgement that there is dukkha, suffering, dis-ease. It exists. If we're able to see that our suffering arises by our need to step out of that whole fabric, to distinguish ourselves, we can start to integrate, to be whole, if we can see it, if we can acknowledge it. And the way in which most of us distinguish ourselves and feel separate is by wanting to be distinct. We create this idea about who we are or who we should be to create kind of an inflexible or lasting sense of self that would somehow magically avoid old age, sickness, and death. And we live in that cycle, this kind of endless animal chasing its tail cycle. Maybe out of an unconscious desire for immortality, we think we can create a self by our better job and our better paycheck and our nicer house and our better car and our latest phone, all these things we use to prop ourselves up prop some self that is also imagined into something distinct and separate. And it is the source of everything that makes us suffer and makes the planet suffer. This self that has to be puffed up into something. We pretend somehow that the outside stuff out there is the key to our fulfillment. Of course, it's sold to us pretty nicely, but it is not. It's a mistaken view. We, I guess, need all that stuff kind of like a hermit crab to bolster up this body and this self because we're fragile. It can be over in a minute. And we get more and more stuff to kind of buffer us from the suffering that is inherent with being a being alive, old age, sickness, death. One of my students says, the Buddha wasn't joking. He wasn't joking. The truth is, it's rather delusional to think that anything can protect you. It's a futile approach to fulfillment. And speaking of futility, as I was packing for this particular trip, I had committed to only bringing a carry-on because I'm going to be on little planes. And we had all agreed we're just going to bring these little carry-ons. It's only 10 days. I never bring a big suitcase unless I have to bring all my robes and stuff. But I usually just bring a carry-on unless it's going to be months. So I didn't think this was going to be a problem. But as I was packing, I would find myself kind of carrying on about my carry-on. Like, oh, well, I'm going from kind of cold weather to the tropics, and I'm going to, you know, pack some light clothes, and then in went my toiletries, and then the closed-toed sandals, because that's what I would probably be walking in most of the time, and then the boots, because you needed to have boots on for Corcovado, the national park. And I became kind of possessed by an evil spirit, the spirit of over-preparation. So I, of course, started with all the essentials that I've mentioned, a few outfits, my toiletries, a book, my tablet, my phone, the chargers. Then the mind whispered, well, what if it rains? I'm going to a rainforest. Okay, and goes the raincoat. And that seemed pretty reasonable. And then the sandals and the boots didn't seem like, you know, I'd be happy wearing just these sandals or just these boots all the time. So kind of thought I'd like to bring some cute shoes. So cute shoes went in the carry-on. And then I wondered if I had enough outfits because I might sweat. So more clothes went in there. And some summer dresses. And then I thought, what if I finish the book on the airplane? I can't be without a book. So I bought two more books. And then I thought, what if I finish the books? Because I'm going to have free time. So then I downloaded some books onto the tablet. And then I thought, what happens if we have nothing to talk about? So I bought a cribbage board and a deck of cards. And my family's favorite word game, Quiddler, highly recommend. And then what happens if the like natural bug repellent I bought just doesn't work on me because bugs love me. So I bought the hardcore nasty stuff too. And then I'm going someplace where the sun is shining and look at me, I'm really white. I need extra sunscreen. And obviously my suitcase was now bulging. My little carry-on was ridiculously full, and I was finding myself sitting on it trying to get it to close like a cartoon. And then I started seriously considering whether or not I was going to be willing to pay the fee to bring a big suitcase and just take everything that I could possibly need. And I sat down and thought, am I willing to embarrass myself like this? This little person needs a suitcase that's as big as she is for 10 days. I felt like the prototypical American, the person that I would roll my eyes at. And I seemed to be dedicated to bringing everything I could possibly need. So in Buddhism, we have this expression, the grasper and the grasped are one. That is the grasper, the one who's craving, and the grasped, the object of that craving, are not separable. So kind of a way of saying, you can always look this way for what's going on. So in my packing experience, I was definitely the grasper. What was the grasped? Was it the clothes and the books and the sunscreen and the bug repellent? The grasped was none of that. The grasped was the illusion of control. The belief that if I packed the right things, just the right amount of the right things, that I could anticipate every possible situation and guarantee pretty reasonably perfect trip. That I could be comfortable and safe no matter what. Here's the truth. All that grasping wasn't making me feel safe. It was making me anxious. All of that trying to protect myself from whatever might happen was making me a wreck. I wasn't packing for the trip. I was packing my fears into that suitcase so I could bring them with me everywhere I go. Most of what I packed was my grasping at some kind of security in a world that's always in flux. And I recognized that this was a trip that it was a family reunion, and I might have had some worries about the potential intensity of being on a remote island for 10 days with my beloved family. No escape. And no doubt they were thinking the same thing about me as they were packing their carry-ons. So I unpacked half of it. I zipped up the suitcase and I let go of the need to be ready for everything. I knew I'd be safe no matter what, because I knew I would greet it and meet it, whatever happened. I'd just keep going. And you know what happened on the trip? I was ready for anything. I had left enough room in my suitcase, kind of, this suitcase, to be ready for anything. Because I couldn't possibly be ready for everything. No one can. I knew I would move with what arose, and that's how it went. I didn't miss a single thing I left behind. I used everything I brought and needed, and I didn't need anything more. The grasper and the grasped are one. They feed off each other. My need for control, safety, created my overpacked suitcase. But when we stop grasping at trying to protect this self, to make room for what is instead of what we fear, we get to experience unexpected joys, surprises we didn't plan for, because we're open and we're free to be with all of those unidentifiable sounds in the jungle. And that's what I found sitting there in my one set of pajamas that doubled as loungewear. So in the Buddhist world, this grasping or clinging is called tanha. It's in Sanskrit, it means thirst. And it's the source of all of our suffering, grasping, clinging, wanting things to be more like this or less like that, wanting things to hold still so we could feel safe. It's said that the Buddha only taught about suffering. the arising and the cessation of suffering. You could argue in Buddhism, nothing else is really relevant. Just the arising and cessation of suffering, the causal connections between the arising and cessation of suffering. That's the only relevant thing in our practice. Of course, it takes in everything, but it's the key. The causal relationships of the arising and cessation of suffering is expressed one way in the Buddhist teaching of the three marks of existence. The first mark of existence is a big word in Buddhism, but let's just use it at its face value right now. The first mark is, does anybody know it? First mark? Well, some of you do know it, but thanks for not shouting. Impermanence. Everything's in flux. Anicca. All phenomena are in flux, constantly changing. The second mark of existence is anatta. All phenomena, that's everything that we can perceive and that exists, are lacking or devoid of anything essential essence, like stable, unchanging, fixed thing. And as a result, the third mark of existence is dukkha, suffering, dis-ease, discomfort. So the causation of all of our suffering is our grasping or clinging to nothing that can be grasped or clinged to. It's nothing. There's nothing there. There's not even one here that can be grasping. It's moving. It's impermanent. My packing for Costa Rica was an expression of grasping. And when I was able to zoom out, I could see that the grasping has something to do with protecting this person, this self that I've created, this endless effort that we have to protect this one from what could happen. This I, this me, this mine. The me who thinks she might be able to prepare for every possible contingency and therefore keep herself safe and her loved ones too. This I, me, mine is the grasper and the grasped and the source of suffering. We grasp for these distinctive selves, for control, for safety, even though it is the source of our suffering. And even though there's nothing graspable. If we can sit in the jungle and learn to experience life just as it is, as it really is, we experience what it really is, which is transient, moving, and interdependent. There's nothing to grasp because there's nothing not here. It's no thing is holding still for us to grasp it, including this one and that one. It's here, it's gone. It's here, it's gone. It's here, it's gone. So in Costa Rica, sitting on the deck, experiencing life just as it is, unable to identify any of that cacophony, and noticing this dynamic mutuality of me and all of those creatures arising together, creating the moment together, no sense of being separate from it. The flux of it all tasted like freedom. Letting go of having to protect myself, it is freedom. Unable to identify anything, it's really great. Just like put the dictionary down for a while. Perhaps you've had a taste of that yourself, maybe even this morning in your zazen, this feeling that we were all here together, breathing, making our own little noises, songs with our noses, bodies, and our burps, and our sniffles, and our sneezing, and our coughing, and our swallows, We were making a kind of little symphony here, weren't we? Individually and collectively having this moment. When we experience this moment here in the jungle of our lives, wherever that is, we find there's nothing that we have to protect, to keep safe from. We feel at ease, the absence of suffering. We can experience that wherever the jungle is. For me, yesterday afternoon, it was Trader Joe's. For you, maybe it's highway in San Jose. That's your jungle. All those beings are you, and you are them. There's nothing that has to change when you're in the jungle. Nothing you have to protect in your jungle. You just have to be okay with it. Just meet it and move with it, because it's moving anyway. The jungle may not look like you expect. It may not, your life is the jungle. It may not be what you planned. It's filled with your coulda, woulda, shouldas. But none of it really matters. What matters is where you find yourself in each moment and your willingness to greet it with an open heart, just the way it is. Because when we grasp and try to make it something else, all we're doing is reflecting our own discontented mind. A mind that seeks fulfillment out there instead of here. Your fulfillment is an inside job. If you take care of this one, you take care of all of us. That's how we save all beings, taking care. So you don't have to be in the remote jungles of the Osa Peninsula of Costa Rica to unpack your grasping and release ourselves, our ideas about these selves. You're free to ungrasp at any moment, like right now, ungrasp. Let go. You're perfectly safe. We all are. We're incredibly lucky to be perfectly safe. It's wherever you are in any given moment that you can meet and greet that whole symphony. Imagine if you're in traffic and you look around at the other cars and you see them as wild animals, just like you, just inhabiting this jungle right now. Would you feel a little softer in your heart towards them? They're no different than you. To meet this innate, kind of given freedom, the Buddha instructed us to uproot. Uproot, he uses that word a lot. Uproot our cravings. One well-known example of the Buddha's teaching of uprooting our craving is in the Dhammapada, where he emphasizes letting go of our craving. He says this: as a tree with roots unharmed and firm, though cut down, sprouts again, so while latent craving is not rooted out, the sorrow springs up again and again. And he said this as well: the man, woman, in whom all craving is uprooted, entirely destroyed, free from craving, attains liberation. The Buddha is teaching us how deeply ingrained our craving is, that it must be uprooted like a tree's roots. We have to look, we have to see this craving one to prevent this cycle of suffering, birth, death, birth, death. Samsara. In other words, we have to pay attention to what it is we're stuffing into our suitcases in order to protect ourselves from life just as it is. What are we packing every day into our lives to avoid what's just here? We have to compassionately address this one and understand our own hidden agendas to feel safe, to be in control, to be distinctive and special. The Buddha's explanation for how to actually do that, how to uproot your cravings, you may not be surprised. He recommends meditation. He says, these four kinds of striving lead to the uprooting of defilements, the effort to restrain, abandon, develop, and protect. In other words, it's up to us, individually and collectively. It's we who must make an active effort to discover and then not choose our own unwholesome qualities, cravings. It's we who have to abandon defilements, anger, ignorance, greed. It's we who have to cultivate wholesome qualities. It's we who must then guard what we have developed, turn away from unwholesomeness. When we practice this way, we uproot the causes of our suffering. We see what it is we're really trying to do to protect ourselves, and we replace those habits with wholesome choices. It's not rocket science. It just requires attention. This is not actually a huge project. It's just a moment by moment by moment by moment by moment project that goes on for the rest of your life. It's actually a modest thing to pay attention. It's not puffed up and important. It's just paying close attention to what's really happening now. And what's really happening now is not what happened yesterday or tomorrow. It's what's happening now. In my case, that meant considering what I was trying to pack into that suitcase, which was a lot of anxiety. And then choosing a smaller suitcase and less anxiety. Simple as that. And so that little suitcase was packed with opportunity, kind of an openness. I packed so that I would be willing to meet whatever happened without much preparation. Because who amongst us is really prepared for what life gives us? Anybody had a life that was predictable? Raise your hand. I packed to be willing to face the flux. And I did. And sitting there on the deck with everything screaming their amazing cacophony, I was infused with kind of a joyful acceptance of the messy, beautiful life we're in. The rainforest kind of washed clean my sense that any ideas I might have brought with me that things should be somehow different than how they were right then. I was on a wave of life. And that's how it goes. And me, this little person, it's just a tiny little drop in the wave, like all of you, like all of life. So thank you for listening. I hope your suitcases are light in life and that you leave a lot of room here to be open for whatever is available for you to see. It's pretty great. Thank you. Question? Yes.
So, I echo a lot with enjoying nature. And when I travel, I always want like to go to forests or go on a hike. So there's this some event that's happening in my life that's making me not at peace. Or at least today when I was thousand, that's all I can think about. So what happened was I'm dog sitting for a friend, and the pup I got, he's super sweet. But and I've had Frenchies before, so I have experience with that breed. But I did notice that for this particular pup, his nose is really short. It's extra short with extra large head. So it's not like the ones I had before. And it's causing him a lot of suffering. Every single breath that he's taking, he's suffering. He makes a noise like a T-Rex, like an actual T-Rex. Last night I was in my bed and then he was breathing. I feel like I was in a jungle. I feel like there's a T-Rex in my mouth. And then when he gets excited, he's out of breath. So I feel like I'm not able to make peace with that. I feel angry and also bad at the same time. I'm not angry at him. He's a very simple, sweet boy. I'm angry, so angry at the breeder because I think they're not supposed to bring a life to the world that every single breath is suffering. And at the same time, I feel very bad for the pup as what happened, like what someone caused this to you. And now we have this life who is very sweet, but every single second that he's on this in this world, he's suffering. So I think that's one time only, first time in my life I'm like literally sitting in a jungle with the noise, with the sound. And then I'm not able to be okay with it. I feel actually very angry. I'm still like he's still at my place. He's a good boy. But I just want to think about honestly. I don't know how to deal with that.
Two things come to mind, Sherry. One is, how do you know he's suffering? I know it sounds like suffering to you. It looks like suffering, probably look like suffering to all of us. But you don't know he's suffering. He might be really enjoying his life. He doesn't know an alternative life in which he is a Frenchie with a different nose. This is his existence. And then you're really not going to like this part, which is, what we see is through our lens.
That's true.
And maybe you could think about the ways in which you're suffering. That how is it that you feel you can't breathe? Where is it? I'm sorry to go here because it might not, it could just be the dog. It could also be this suffering. I mean, we're all suffering. What is it that makes you feel you can't breathe? And it shouldn't be like this for him and for you. It would be a place that I would explore for myself. That's all I can offer is what my lens does. And maybe it's not right in a global way that he was brought into this world. He's bringing some joy too. And I want to acknowledge and respect the fact that you are feeling compassionately connected to this being, because that's also here in play. And it's hard for us to look at suffering and accept it. It's not just the Frenchie. What's his name?
Chuckle.
Chuckle.
Yeah.
It's not just Chuckle. It's all of us. And principally, it's this one.
Yeah, I understand. I feel like he's happy. He's definitely a happy pup. He doesn't know the other ways, but that's true. just making, and also his family is making everything that he can to make sure that he's hydrated, he's breathing well, but.
I'll just zoom out a little bit. What happens if it was a child who was born with all sorts of disabilities? Would you say their life, they shouldn't have been born?
No, they deserve this.
Maybe, maybe not. It's the question of your view. Maybe broaden the field of what's acceptable and look at your own suffering.
This is my first time in here. Thank
Welcome.
you so much for sharing. I originally come from Shanghai, China. My family is all Buddhist. I have a problem with being a Buddhist. One thing is, I really like meat. I
So does the Dalai Lama.
And then I know that in China, there are different branches also that allow for meat, and there are branches that forbid meat. What's your perception of we craving meat as a food? Because that's another life.
Well, I mean, it's funny, right before the trip, I was ill, and all the things I eat, which is like I eat like a bear, nuts and berries and vegetables, I couldn't eat. The doctor said not my entire, I mean, I was grieving my food categories because I had to go to the emergency room, and I just couldn't eat any of these foods anymore. For the whole time I was in Costa Rica, I couldn't eat fruits and vegetables. And for me, that was very radical. And he told me, you have to eat meat. Like, I don't want to eat meat that much. And he goes, well, eat it. You need protein. So I ate chicken and I ate, well, I actually there I ate fish, but now I ate chicken and fish. And I think it depends, like everything else is contextual. The fact is that we're killing life all the time. Your body works to kill off microbes that are not good for you. Every breath you take is involving a death. Every step you take is involving a death. I think you should pay attention to what you're doing. And you use the word craving meat. That's interesting to me. Craving. So you won't be happy without it. That seems like a flag. I would look at that. But listening to the body's needs is not wrong. And I would look at the expression you had, craving. Like, what is that? What is that craving? But I don't think there's a rule that applies to everybody on the planet. And you have to make some kind of radical acceptance of yourself. And then it doesn't have to do with what I think or anybody else thinks. You have to make peace with your choice being as wholesome as it can be. Maybe you'll eat a little less, maybe you'll eat more. I don't know. You'll have to be okay with that. That's your job. And you already know and have some responsibility, it sounds like, for your awareness about that it's a life. Take it seriously.
And the belly.
Did the bell ring?
Yeah. A
Okay.
question. Okay.
Sorry, the bell rang. It's lunchtime, where we will not be eating meat. Thank you all so much for your practice. And I hope you come back at Tokoji and give yourself a chance to explore deeply our shared existence. We're going to end with the gatha on page
two. Bottom of page two.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.